Welcome to episode 41 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me today, fulfilling both the co-host and the producer engineer roles, is Sean Brody. Sean, thanks for stepping in and carrying the load this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of moves.
I think that might be the reason why RJ's not on, is like this is just a lot to try to cover in a relatively abbreviated time, so I don't blame him for wanting to skip out on this. But it is going to be a fun episode because we do have a lot to talk about, and there's a good chance we're going to touch on your favorite team, any of the listeners, because it's just so many moves that we're going to try to cover.
Oh, yeah. There's just looking at our list here. Probably at least, 20 moves, maybe?
Yeah, probably. I definitely think we're close to that. And, with the winter meetings just closing up, I was a little surprised that there weren't a lot of big-name free agents that signed over the winter meetings. We're going to get into some of the guys that did sign and how they all tend to fit one particular category of ball player, but there wasn't a ton of big name free agent movement. And while there were some trades, and we talked a little bit about some of them on our last episode, we'll talk a little bit more about some others. The whole idea of a JD Martinez or an Eric Cosmer, some of these other big names signing, or even bigger names going back and forth in a trade, didn't happen so much.
Yeah, it was mostly just the mid-tier reliever market that was moving pretty quick and gone. And,
yeah.
I mean, good for them. They found homes pretty soon. Usually those guys don't find homes until the end of the offseason, but it's good to see teams really putting emphasis on good relief pitching.
It's something we'll get into a little bit later in the show, but for now we will talk about the biggest trade that took place over the last couple of days. I'm almost getting tired of talking about Marlins players getting traded, especially power-hitting outfielders with good arms. But the big move for this episode is going to be the trade. The Marlins traded Marcell Ozuna to the St. Louis Cardinals, and in return, the Marlins bring back Sandy Alcantara, Magnus Sierra, Zach Gallen, and – oh, man, I'm blanking on the last guy. He's obviously not that important. Do you remember who the last name in that trade was?
No, and that's kind of the point of this trade, right? they could have gotten, they could have gotten a cardboard box packaged together, and they would have taken that because it would have given them salary relief. And that, I'd rail on them in this podcast we did when Stanton got traded. The same story here. It's just this whole narrative that people in the public sphere have going on of, oh, well, they're just doing a rebuild. They're just getting prospects, and it's no different from the White Sox or the Astros or the Cubs whenever they did it. And that's not right. That's not true, because they've traded three of their best players and have gotten almost nothing in return. What one top 100 prospect?
Well, maybe. I'm not sure about that. So I can't disagree with the fact that the first two trades, the Gordon and the Stanton trades, seemed like the returns were a little bit light. In the case of the Stanton trade, was ridiculously light. I think that probably Nick Niedert, who came back in the D. Gordon trade, was going to wind up being the Marlins' top prospect, which is insane, because Stanton should have brought back so much more. And we've talked about this in a couple of different ways. We all are in agreement, and by we all, I mean literally everybody on the planet, is in agreement that the Marlins ownership is garbage, and this is bad for the team. It's bad for the franchise, short term, long term, everything in between. Nobody likes this boondoggle that they've transformed a mid-tier competitive National League East team into a full-on tank with no real hope of rebuilding. I do have a little bit of a more nuanced view of the Ozuna trade, because going into this season, if the Marlins were going to be competitive and they did want to, actually make the effort to keep a payroll, field a decent team, be competitive, but they also felt like maybe they needed to make some moves, I kind of felt like Ozuna was one of the players that they could deal or they could do something with and not completely tear the team down. I think he's got very high value right now. I think that value may perhaps be a little over I, the best way to put it is I'm not entirely sure his 2017 is going to be repeatable in the future. So moving on from him and selling high on him might not be the worst scenario in the world. But when you look at the return, Baseball Prospectus's talent evaluators are higher on the guys that the Marlins got back on the Ozuna trade than anybody else who the Marlins have gotten back for Gordon, for Stanton. The top two pieces of this are the guys who look like perhaps top 101 prospects. So you could look at this deal and say, okay, the Marlins actually did get some value back for Ozuna, whether it's equivalent to his production. We can make lots of arguments back and forth about that. But I don't see this trade as being the fiasco that Gordon and Stanton were. I think that the Marlins here may have actually gotten some talent back that could make them better in the long term.
Yeah, it's certainly not the Stanton trade return. I think maybe, for me at least, it's hangover from the Stanton trade, or just being upset with that they're selling and a team that should have been competitive this year and was
sure,
like two steps close and just right on the doorstep, and it's all gone. And so, I mean, I think the return for Ozuna, we'll look back in 2 years, 3 years, and we'll say, okay, well, maybe it was a little better than we thought it was. But again, the context of when they're doing it and how they're doing it, I think completely overrules how we look at it right now.
Yeah, I could see that as being a possibility. The thing that for me that really jumped out was when the discussion was that Alcantara was going to be the top name going back in the trade for Ozuna, I was very, very concerned, because that's not the kind of value to get back for a 6-win outfielder with power and youth. You know, $10 million contract in arbitration this year, which is hardly paying anything for that kind of production. When I found out that Sierra was included in the deal, that's when the light bulb kind of went off in my head, and I said, okay, this could be all right, because I find that Sierra's floor is high enough that I think he's probably going to be a center fielder for this Marlins team for, you know, 6 seasons, maybe 7 seasons. Or, you know, if he's really good, the Marlins will trade him away at some point. But I think that they're actually getting back a worthwhile replacement for Ozuna, a very, very different player, but a guy who can actually go in the outfield. And this is the first time I think they've gotten one of those players in a trade.
So kind of going off of that, you're talking about playing center field for the Marlins. Now, they do have a center fielder, Christian Yelich, and I would wonder if they're going to keep him. You saw reports this weekend where they want to keep him, and then like almost, what, an hour later, it had turned and it was, well, if Yelich wants to leave, we might move him somewhere if he really wants to go. And, I mean, obviously it's disingenuous because they just floated out that they don't want to trade him so that they can turn Yelich into this bad guy who wants to leave and wants to force his way out the door. But do you think they're actually going to move him?
I do. I think that some team will offer them a deal which will bring back even more value than Ozuna did in terms of prospect haul to the Marlins. And I think the Marlins won't be able to help themselves. And at this point, you know, what goodwill are you maintaining by keeping Christian Yelich? Like, most fans of baseball are like, well, I hope he gets to escape. The team is going to be terrible whether Christian Yelich is there or not. So I don't see a point in keeping him around just for the sake of keeping him around. If they don't receive a very good offer in terms of prospect haul for Yelich, it makes perfect sense to hold on to him and wait until you get a better offer, whether it's in July or next year or something like that. Move on from him at some point, because he's a great player and he's going to bring back some sort of return at some time, unless he gets, you know, terribly injured or figures out a way to hit more ground balls, which is almost impossible at this point. But he is a certainly talented player. I don't think it's disingenuous, because I don't think the Marlins are thinking through this enough to be playing manipulation games at this point. To me, it just seems like a dysfunctional front office that says the first thing that comes to their minds. So I don't feel like they're playing some sort of manipulation game to make Yelich look like a bad guy. They know they're already the bad guys. So what's the point? I think they'll move on from him. I don't think they really care one way or the other if Yelich wants to stay or Yelich wants to go. I think it'll just be, you know, if they get the right move.
Yeah, and I mean, my wonder with Yelich is that The only scenario I think where they don't get back good prospects in return is if they package Wei Yin-Chin with him.
Yeah, that would be a possibility.
And you have to wonder if they go that far, if they would also throw like a Martin Prado in a trade with that, or someone else who's got like a decent sized contract, and that would give them ability to cut bait. But then you also have to wonder if they go low enough on their payroll, it's going to raise some alarms, and Major League Players Union is going to be forced to step in, and they're going to be forced to fight it, kind of like they did in 2010, when their payroll was lower than the revenue sharing they took in. And so they gained access to their books for 3 years. Well, then Michael Wiener died and Tony Clark took over as the OVPA. And that ended, and almost immediately when their three-year deal with the Marlins ended, the Marlins sold off their team again. And so I wonder if it's almost something where you have to micromanage this front office. Even though it's a different front office, it seems the same tactics are still there. But you have to wonder, A, why the Major League Players Union has not stepped in and said anything yet, because it's very clear what they've been doing. And I also just wonder how much lower they want to go.
Yeah, what I've heard was, you know, the $60 million number has been bandied about. The $90 million number has been bandied about. I'll tell you this. I'm pretty certain this team won't get into an issue where they have to turn over their books for 3 years because of the fact that that's happened before. And while the team doesn't seem to be very functional from a front office perspective, they don't really strike me as the type of team that's going to actively, you know, put themselves in a position where they have to be micromanaged by Major League Baseball. That's not what they want. I would not be surprised if they continue to cut payroll. I would be very surprised if at this point, now that they have some breathing room, I'd be very surprised if they decide to package the Chen contract with somebody like Christian Yelich. I mean, with Chen, if he shows health over the first half of the season, if he can pitch and pitch, you know, okay, it's very possible that they could move him in July, eat half his contract, and be done with him. You know, trade him for basically nothing and eat half his contract, and then they're out a bunch of money. You know, they save some money by the middle of the year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have some patience with him. Prado's an interesting guy in terms of a trade. Prado and Starlin Castro are kind of on the same wavelength to me. I think they're guys that they will move if there is an opportunity to move them. It wouldn't surprise me at all if a team like the White Sox, or a team that's going to be relatively low payroll, maybe the Royals, if a lot of their free agents don't come back, going out and say, hey, you know, we'll pay half the freight on Martin Prado to replace Mike Moustakas, that doesn't seem like it would be too surprising either. So I think this team can get out from some other of these contracts. I don't see them trying to go below like $50 million or something, because I just think it would create too many headaches for the front office, and they've got enough as it is.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Just the cynical person in me thinks they're going to go lower, and they're going to go as low as they possibly can get. But I think there's a threshold, because if you go below that threshold, then you raise too many alarm bells, you draw more attention to yourself than need be. I do think, and this is the tinfoil hat Sean talking, but I do think that there's an important date to remember, and that's 2020, when their Fox TV deal expires and they get to renegotiate a new one. And part of me wonders if they're going to suppress payroll until 2020, kind of stay the level they are, get that big TV deal. By that time, they'll probably have attached a name to the stadium, and then try to sell this team for more than they purchased it for. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that sounds crazy. I don't know if that is correct in its cynical nature, but that's really where I feel this is going to go, just from how the selling process has gone so far.
Right. Yeah, I think that is a little tinfoil hatty, because I think that after all the trouble that Major League Baseball went through to put Derek Jeter as the face of this franchise, I think that they will almost force this franchise to try to make the comeback before they flip the team or something like that. It would not surprise me at all if there's some motivation to at least make them take a shot at bringing this team back after 2020. Instead of moving on so quickly. But I never know. I never know with ownership groups, and the things that extremely wealthy men do tend to go right over my head. I'm tired of talking about the Marlins. We're going to stop talking about the Marlins, and let's look at this from the Cardinals' perspective, because this is an aggressive move by a team that was kind of stuck in the middle of the National League Central and the wild card picture last year. And by one metric, Ozuna's a huge upgrade in their outfield. They had plenty of outfield depth, but they didn't have impact the same way that Ozuna brought it. Now with Pham and Fowler and Ozuna in their outfield, the Cardinals' outfield looks really good. They still have some holes they probably would want to fill. I don't know if we would say they need to fill them, and they've been linked to guys like Josh Donaldson and Manny Machado, which I think are kind of pipe dreams and are not going to happen, but still it's fun to talk about. But let's talk a little bit about Ozuna and the fit for the Cardinals. Do you see this as, you know, anytime you can get a high caliber player, it's going to be a win for your team. But do you like this move beyond just the fact that they were able to swap some prospects out and get a kind of an impact player in return? Do you think he's the right player to bring into this team?
Oh yeah, for the Cardinals, absolutely. You saw them even at the trade deadline, they were floating the idea, when they didn't sell fully, they floated the idea of going after Donaldson, Machado, like you said. They're doing that this offseason as well. And so I think the cost for Ozuna and that level of outfielder was perfect for them, and it fit exactly their need. The one thing that does strike out, that does stick out to me, that's kind of almost weird in a sense, is that we were, 2 years into the Grichuk-Piscotty era, and it's almost the writing's on the wall. It's pretty much done at this point. Well, I guess Piscotty's moved on, but even Grichuk, he doesn't really have a clear path to playing time. And so I wonder how much longer they'll keep Grichuk after they move Piscotty. I would assume through the season, but Grichuk seems like someone who, if he struggles again, he might be a non-tender candidate come next offseason.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I honestly am lower on Randall Grichuk than most, I think. I've never been a huge Grichuk guy. I'm a little surprised with how much he's fallen off so quickly, but he had a little bit of a comeback in 2016. I just, you know, the weird thing about this guy is his on-base percentage is so bad that it tends to overshadow what he can bring in terms of power. And I'm not certain that he's a very Cardinals type of player. He seems like a guy who could be a change of scenery, you know, benefit guy, maybe from a little bit of, you know, swing adjustment or something like that. Maybe he's more of an American League player. I don't know. I definitely think that this is a way for the team to consolidate, but I look at this rotation and I think to myself, is there a way that they could have used some of their prospect capital to consolidate a little bit in the rotation? I see their rotation a lot like their outfield. There's a lot of players who are maybe good, pretty good. You know, your Piscottis and your Grichuks are kind of similar to the guys like maybe Luke Weaver and, I don't know, maybe Adam Wainwright at this point in the rotation. And I kind of would like to see and Miles Mikolas, who they brought in. And I kind of would have liked to see the Cardinals try to make a leap in their rotation the same way. And if I would have had to pick one of the two, I would have picked the rotation. But maybe that's just me being a little bit nervous about the youth in the rotation, some of the unproven guys. But I think that there's still a hole there that needs to be filled. We don't know. The Cardinals still have the prospect capital to make a big move like that. They have guys who maybe next year are going to look really sharp. You know, maybe Alex Reyes comes back next year. They have other pitching depth in the minors. They tend to produce these guys like, you know, out of nowhere. That's pretty remarkable. So I kind of would like to see them do something with their rotation still. And I do think they brought in a reliever, and we'll get to him in a little bit, but they are kind of short that dominant late inning reliever as well. So they don't quite yet stack up with the Cubs, I think, in this division, or they don't quite stack up with maybe the Diamondbacks or the Rockies in the wild card. Maybe they're close now. And while I like Ozuna, I'm just not sure he's going to provide that same kind of impact next year that he did last year.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And same thing you said is I don't think they're done making moves. I think they have enough prospect capital if they want to go out and trade, if they want to go out and try to get a Chris Archer if he pops available. If they want to go out and get a starting pitcher, they have the prospect capital to go out and get a starting pitcher. And I also think they're not completely helpless on the free agent market. You still have Yu Darvish available. You still have Lance Lynn. You still have Jake Arrieta, even if he wants to come over and do the Dexter Fowler thing. I don't see that likely. Alex Cobb is still out there. I think it'll be interesting because they're a team who could go out and they could re-sign Lance Lynn. They could even try to get Alex Cobb as well. I don't think they need to. I think
with Alex Reyes
coming back, he should be at the beginning of the season. His Tommy John surgery was in February, so typical return about 13, 14 months. He should be back about March or April. I don't think he slots back into the starting rotation. There was questions even before his surgery whether he was going to end up being a starter. I think that'll be your impact relief guy, but they do need to go out and sign a big starter.
Man, I would be so upset if that's what the Cardinals do and they bring Alex Reyes back as a reliever. You know, obviously Baseball Prospectus tends to be higher on him than most. He was the number one prospect in all of baseball according to their list last year. I would really kind of slow play Reyes because he's one of those few guys that does have the upside of a number one starter, and just having him kind of get back on a starting schedule, work him very slowly along, start him off on 2, 3, 4 inning outings, but keep him pitching in a starting role and giving him that recovery time, I think would be good. I'm certainly not a pitching coach and I'm certainly not a recovery expert, but man, if they moved him to the bullpen and then really liked him there, because that's what happened with Trevor Rosenthal and that's what's happened with plenty of other pitchers in history, I feel like they'd be leaving so much money on the table if they went that route. But I do agree with you with everything else. I would really like to see the Cardinals – let me take that back. I would not like to see the Cardinals be a 90-win team because I'm tired of the Cardinals being a 90-win team. But for their fans and for what they can do, I think that they're very close. I do have some concerns about whether or not both Tommy Pham and Marcell Ozuna are going to be the type of impact players they were last year. Pham, I've got a little bit more faith in. For different reasons. Like, Pham has been very, very good in the past. Last year was kind of a consolidation year. He looked like a slightly different player last year. Ozuna looked like the same player he always was. Almost all of his underlying metrics were very, very similar to how he played in his previous couple of seasons. But somehow he hit almost a quarter of his fly balls for home runs. He's always made really hard contact, but his batting average on balls in play was good. But like, there was never any big difference between like his exit velocity or his hard hit ball rate or his plate appearance, his plate discipline between 2016 and 2017. He just had a lot more success in 2017. So I'm kind of thinking he's going to regress a little bit, but the floor for him is very, very high. With Pham, he had that shift in skills, it seemed like. I kind of feel like it's possible for him to regress a long way back down, whereas with Ozuna, I think he's got a higher floor. But I really don't expect either of them to be like 6-win players again in 2018. It seems out of character.
I like Pham. I think the Ozuna critique is fair. I do remember seeing on Twitter and stuff whenever Ozuna got traded that a lot of people are going to say Pham is the third best player in this outfield, and that's just not true. He might be better than Dexter Fowler. I know Fowler had injuries last year, but I mean, it's really exciting to see because you have Fowler, who's got hopefully a full season injury free now. You have Ozuna in the outfield, and you have another season of Tommy Pham. The one thing that sticks out to me is that now Colton Wong is really limited in what he can do. I guess he's limited to platooning with Jed Jerko, because Wong could play outfield. He didn't play outfield in 2017. 2016, he played a little bit, but he's really limited into where he can play, and he had a good year last year. So, I mean, maybe he's the odd man out because Paul DeJong looked good. Jed Jerko has been one of the best players in the Cardinals since he was acquired. And so maybe you slot Jerko at first instead of Jose Martinez. Maybe you slot Colton Wong at first instead of Jose Martinez. My guess would be Jerko instead of Wong. But they could also go out and get a first baseman too, which I would be very leery about.
See, I wouldn't. I definitely think when you're kind of your starting first baseman is either going to be Jose Martinez or Luke Voit. No, you go ahead and get a first baseman. That seems fine. Even if it's somebody like that, they go out and just pick up, a Mark Reynolds type. I'm not talking about breaking the bank, but I've always liked the Logan Morrison fit for the Cardinals. I think he's a really good. he could slot in really, really nicely as a first baseman for this team. He's not going to cost them an arm and a leg. But even if they go out and get somebody like, I don't know, Mitch Moreland or Lucas Duda or Mark Reynolds, I definitely think making some sort of upgrade, and especially adding a left-handed hitter, because the team's very right-handed right now, other than Matt Carpenter, I think that's a really good look for them. So I would make at least some small move. And then the Wong Jerko platoon at second base is not very good defensively, but I really like it. I think that's a really solid group there. And then the other guy is both those guys have this position flexibility that you talked about. I mean, Jerko can still stand at shortstop. It's ugly, but he can do it. So I would definitely be pretty pleased to have one of those guys, both of those guys as the regular second baseman, unless, you know, God forbid, Donaldson gets involved, and then all bets are off.
So what you could do as well, Matt Carpenter played first base a little bit last year. You move Matt Carpenter to first, put Jed Jerko at third, or Colton Wong at third, one of Wong at second and or third, and the other of Jerko at whichever other position. I think that would be a feasible way to get all of them in the lineup. You'd still have Jose Martinez on the bench. You still have Luke Voit on the bench. I think that you are right. They do need another lefty bat, but I think that lefty bat could be Adam Lind.
Yeah, sure. Lind would be great.
He's got that role down with the Nationals. I think he'd be a perfect fit on this roster. And, I mean, again, the only lefty bat they have right now on the bench is Greg Garcia, and I think you can do an improvement over Greg Garcia.
Yeah, for sure. Let's we spent a lot of time on this one, which is a shame, because now we're going to have to blow through every single reliever signing extremely quickly. So as we mentioned before, pretty much every reliever in baseball, except for the really high-end ones, signed a free agent contract while in between our last two shows. So I want you to really quickly tell me which guy who signed was the most interesting to you up to this point, and we're going to use that as a way to talk about all the other guys, and we'll give some really brief thoughts on some of the other ones who have signed. So we'll let you kick it off with the first reliever you want to talk about.
Well, I really like Fernando Rodney. I know that's a bit masochist of me, but, I mean, he did do well last year. There was periods, especially at the beginning of the year, where he struggled. I think that he's a very good pitcher. He's actually a pitcher who strikes out batters, which is weird because the Twins just don't get those pitchers. Mm-hmm. I think the deal he signed, too, was very team-friendly. If you're a Twins fan, it was 1 year, $6 million, I believe. Or yeah. 1 year, $4.5 million. So, I mean, it makes sense all around. He goes into a bullpen now that includes him and one of my favorites, Trevor Hildenberger, and both of them have absolutely devastating changeups. And so that back end is going to be really fun to watch. I think the Twins are going for it now. I like to see a Minnesota roster that's going for it. They were floated out there as looking at Yu Darvish. So I think that if they keep going for it, they are going to do very well, and I'd like to see them competitive.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think Rodney gets a bad rap sometimes because he's kind of one of those cardiac closers, but that's fine. He's still good. You know, on the aggregate, he's still good. He's going to blow you a game once in a while, but I don't know, pretty much every closer is. So I think they make a little bit more of that in Rodney's case. I'm with you. I think the Twins are trying to push for it. If they end up with Darvish, that'd be special. Great. I'm going to talk about one of the ones I like the most out of this, and that's probably the attack that the Rockies have made on their bullpen. So they signed Brian Shaw from the Indians, and they signed Jake McGee, re-signed him after last season. So they got a righty and a lefty, two guys who can pitch a lot, and two guys who are going to be coming into the team on three-year deals. Three-year deals for relievers tend to get a little dicey, but the Rockies really needed to attack their roster in a way that's going to be, it's kind of strike while the iron is hot, and they had a surprising kind of come up last year and got into that wild card spot. And I think that their being aggressive now is really a smart move. And if you were going to sign two relievers out of this bunch that, there's so many guys available this year, I feel like that the two that they went after are a little bit more high reliability guys. Shaw has pitched very, very well over an extended period of time in Cleveland and in Arizona. McGee, they know, can have some success in Colorado because he's their own guy. They got a righty and a lefty. there's talk that they're going to still bring back Greg Holland, which is interesting to me. I'm not as sure about Holland. I'm still very nervous about him. But again, he's proven he can succeed in Colorado. So this was a team that if they didn't address their bullpen, that was going to be a very, very big weakness for them next year. And now I think they're kind of getting to the point where they can compete for the wild card again next year. And I think that's really exciting. It's not something I've said a lot about the Rockies in the past is I like their free agent signings, but this is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I'm going to take it a little bit of a different direction. I'm going to go to the Chicago Cubs, and they're signing of Brandon Morrow and their signing of Steve Cishek down by the seashore was absolutely fantastic. Morrow was a guy who came back from Tommy John. He gained like 3 miles an hour velocity-wise and just absolutely was devastating for the Dodgers last year. I know he got used in every single game of the postseason, so, I mean, maybe you have to wonder if there's going to be some wear coming into this year, but, I mean, I think 2 years, $21 million, fantastic deal for him. He's got a year three option, 2020, for $12 million, but it's a really good deal. I like Brandon Morrow. I hope they give him the opportunity to close, has been reported, and they don't go out and get someone bigger, but, I mean, it remains to be seen. He strikes me as a very Wade Davis candidate, which is ironic because he's going to be fitting Wade Davis's role.
The other thing I think is kind of interesting is though both he and Cishek were very strong in the second half of last year. And, you know, with Morrow, of course, you know, he had the slow start to the season because he was in AAA. But Cishek got better as the season went on. These guys, neither of these are like huge investments. They're relatively short. They're relatively low cost. So the Cubs still remain flexible in certain ways. I'm a little surprised they didn't go out and get a lefty. They might still. That's not out of the realm of possibility. I was thinking that, you know, Mike Minor or Jake McGee would be good fits for this Cubs team because right now it's Justin Wilson and Mike Montgomery, and Montgomery's kind of going to be needed in the swingman role, I imagine, and Justin Wilson really looked bad at the end of last season. So that's kind of a weakness for them at this point, but they're the Cubs. They can address it at any point. So, no, I like these two moves as well.
Well, and you have to wonder if they'll address it with an actual lefty or they'll do what the Mets did and go get Anthony Swarzak, who is devastating against lefties. Because the lefty market isn't really something that makes you jump out and say, hey, I really need one of those. It's Tony Watson, Brian Dunsing, Oliver Perez, Jorge De La Rosa, Francisco Liriano, Boone Logan, Abad, Dukes, just those kind of pitchers.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. With Minor being off the market and with now McGee being off the market, I definitely agree with you that there's not a whole bunch of really great lefty relievers out there. But they can't get Swarzak because Swarzak's on the Mets now. And honestly, I think that was a really good deal for the Mets. I think, you know, two years, $14 million is right in that Mets budget because that's probably their entire free agent budget for this offseason. But I think he'll fit in very nicely there. It's shocking to see the team go for a reliever who is not a former Met, but, you know, hey, weirder things have happened. I'm a little concerned about regression in Swarzak's case, but that's because, you know, he's never really done this before up until 2017 and the very end of 2016. So let's really quickly run down some of the other moves. I'm not going to get into terms. I'm just going to get into the names because we literally don't have the time to do that. So Brandon Kinsler re-signs with the Nationals. Joe Smith, another guy who is, you know, absolute death to one side of the plate, the side armor, goes to the Astros. The Phillies bring back Pat Neshek and they add Tommy Hunter. Luke Gregerson is going to move into the Cardinals bullpen. So there's kind of a weird shakeup with the Astros bullpen where Gregerson's out and Joe Smith's in. That's kind of interesting to me. And then the Rangers picked up Chris Martin from Japan, who is not the lead singer of Coldplay, as many jokes have been made. And the Mariners pick up Juan Nicasio, the well-traveled Juan Nicasio, in what is – I'm proud to announce the first correct prediction that Randy, the random number generator, has come up with this season. So hats off to Randy for placing Nicasio with the Mariners, who desperately needed him. That's it for free agent reliever signings. We got some trades we want to talk over and one other free agent signing. So we'll do kind of our batting practice segment, and Sean, I'll let you throw one my way for us to start off with.
All right, let's kick it off with a smaller one. We have Michael Pineda to the Twins and Drew Smyly to the Cubs, so a couple Tommy John guys.
Yeah, so both of these are two-year deals where 2018 is going to be basically a wash. Yeah, there's the chance that maybe Smiley could come back at the end of the season. Nobody should bet on that. Pineda, the ultimate wild card, I would completely ignore him until 2019. But both of these are kind of upside moves for teams that want to contend, that can always use another rotation arm. It's a little bit like some teams are maybe like, hey, what the Dodgers are doing, collecting injured pitchers works. Maybe we can start doing that. If I had to pick one of the two, I kind of like Pineda with the Twins more than Smiley with the Cubs. I think they're both fine pickups. These are both teams that have the money to spend, and they could afford a little bit to go in these routes. But Pineda is so good when he's on, and pitching in Minnesota instead of New York, I think, is a really good fit for him. I hope he doesn't go the Phil Hughes route and get, you know, beat up and further injured once he makes the transition. But I think that could work out really nicely for them in 2019.
No, absolutely. I love the Pineda move. I think that it's kind of funny. Pineda seems to me like a very Twinsy pitcher in that he doesn't walk anybody.
Right.
He strikes out more, which is very un-Twinsy. But, I mean, he just gives up contact, and that's what gets him, is he just leaves the ball over the middle, and he gives up very hard contact. I think playing in that park will help. I think that Pineda is a very good fit for them. If they were to get Yu Darvish in a long-term contract, or like Lance Lynn or somebody like that, year two of that deal, when we have Pineda back in the rotation, Twins are going to be pretty devastating, man. If they can get a starter for a couple years, 2019 is going to be their year.
I think that could really be a possibility. I'm kind of shocked that, you know, we think about the Twins as this team that, you know, just avoids, you know, pitchers who throw strikeouts, who get whiffs. And the new front office really isn't like that. I could very much see them go out. They get one of these top end guys, whether it's Cobb, Darvish, Lynn, one of those guys. And you look at that 2019 rotation, it's like, okay, now you got Berríos. You've got maybe Pineda. You've got whatever the number one or two starter they've got there. They've got some other young guys on the come up, like Gonsalves. Looks like a legitimate contender again, which is great. And they're young in other parts on the diamond. So future looks kind of bright for the Twins.
It's good to see him back there. And hopefully, you don't know how much longer Joe Mauer has, but to get Joe Mauer into the playoffs one more time, because he has given everything he can to Minnesota. And so it's good to see him kind of have that one last shot, one last hurrah. He's not super old, but he's 35, and for a former catcher, that's knocking on the door.
Yeah, for sure. So let me transition really quickly from one of the greatest players in Twins franchise history to one of the greatest players in Padres franchise history, Chase Headley. Unexpectedly, we expected that the Yankees were going to trade him. I did not expect the Yankees to trade him back to the Padres. That was mind-blowing to me that they would do that. So Headley and Brian Mitchell go to the Padres. Jabari Blash goes back to New York, sort of. He's going to go back to New York's AAA affiliate. He's not going to play for the Yankees big league team because, I don't know, he's just a much, much worse version of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, who they already have two of. No other team has one. But Headley going to the Padres – it seems like a stop along the way because they kind of already have a third baseman in Yandervis Solarte. It's a weird deal, but it's kind of really neat. I mean, Headley was great with the Padres. Maybe he would thrive there again.
Well, you have to wonder if it's a precursor to a Solarte move. I know they wanted to keep Solarte there for the tragedy that happened with his family, but you have to wonder if they have Headley there in the event that they move Solarte. And, I mean, going back to the Yankees, they get exactly what they need, another outfielder, right?
They don't have enough of those.
But Blash is there in case somebody gets hurt, obviously. I think Headley is there in the event that somebody gets traded.
Yeah.
But I like the move.
The one thing I'll throw out real quick, and this is speculation, but the Padres have been reportedly making a concerted effort to sign Eric Hosmer, which is – absolutely the weirdest rumor I've heard of this offseason, because it seems to make no sense to me. The Padres are far from contending. They already have an all-star first baseman who they presumably would move to the outfield. where he's not good. I don't really understand that at all, other than they must just love Eric Hosmer and want to make him a part of this franchise, which, you know, if they think they see something where he's going to be a 6-win player going forward, then great, go ahead and make the move. But yeah, I can just see now, like, if they're running Will Myers out there in the outfield and Eric Hosmer at first base and Chase Hudley at third, it's a weird team, man.
Well, and I wonder at that point, too, if you go out and get Hosmer and you move Myers to the outfield, you're not going to move Jose Perella out from there. He was fantastic last season. So on Hunter Renfro?
I don't think they've soured on Hunter Renfro at all, because I've heard things about them, you know, asking for a substantial return for Renfro, and they still believe in his power. So I do think they would wind up moving off of Perella. But yeah, it's really weird. I don't want to talk about this anymore because it's so weird, and because we have like literally no time to talk about X number of other things. But Padres are weird. This is definitely to be continued.
Yeah, we'll be talking about them later in this year. Later in the offseason show. So, next one I got for you, probably the big move, Ian Kinsler to the Angels. He was floated with everybody from the Mets to not the Mets. he was traded for 18-year-old right-handed reliever Wilco Hernandez and 23-year-old outfielder Troy Montgomery. Kinsler owed $11 million. I'm not entirely sure. I believe they got some money back, but, I mean, Angels going for it. First takeaway, Tigers are kind of starting their rebuild.
Yeah,
the Mets fell out. There's three takeaways from me.
Yeah, the Mets part doesn't matter to me because I never expected them to get Kinsler. He's too expensive. He's got an $11 million salary, which is not very much for, you know, the name value of Ian Kinsler.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. This was I heard about this move and I like kissed my fingers like a chef. I was like, this is perfect for the Angels. The Angels defense right now, their infield defense is incredible. Kinsler's last really strong skill is his infield defense. He's not the hitter he used to be when he was like, you know, 20-20 every year player. But him and Simmons and Trout up the middle is bonkers. I love it for them. And, you know, given the fact that they're going to have some questions about their pitching, I definitely think that being able to have the ability to go to their pitchers and say, just put it over the plate and we'll take care of the rest, is going to be really, really valuable to this team. So I think it's perfect. I think it's a great fit. It's always a little questionable when you're like, hey, let's rebuild the 2016 Tigers and bring in Justin Upton and Ian Kinsler, and you know that's a little weird, but I think they picked the right guys if they are going to go that strategy.
Think of the first baseman he's going from. He's going from Miguel Cabrera with the Tigers to Albert Pujols with the Angels. That's kind of a big switch. I know Pujols isn't the player he once was, but that's sort of notable, I guess.
Yeah, and you mentioned off air, he also played with Mark Teixeira in Texas, and so like he's had some really great luck, and now he'll get to play with CJ Cron. So you know, from greatness to greatness to greatness. And it's a cool deal. I love the Stars and Scrubs policy that the Angels are taking out. And it doesn't sound like they're done. They still seem like they're thinking about other moves. So they talked about being involved for Headley. If they brought in Headley to play third base, that's, again, you know, incredible infield defense. They've already got the bats. Maybe they can pitch. It's a fun team.
I wonder who else they go out and get. I mean, they definitely need probably an infielder. I don't know what is left on the open market that they want to get. They floated Zach Cozart. I think Zach Cozart makes a fantastic amount of sense to them. Eduardo Nunez. I think you'd have a good chance getting one of those players and doing very well for yourself. I don't think they're going to go out and get someone who is costing a lot in prospect capital, like a Manny Machado or
right.
Donaldson, obviously. But I do think that they have moves to make, but it's going to cost them money. And that's what happens when you have kind of the farm system that they had run for as long as the time as they had. They're going to have to spend money if they want to compete.
I also think that we should give some credit to Artie Moreno, who has proven time and time again that he is willing to spend money and willing to empower his front office to make decisions. They're not always good decisions, but man, this guy is willing to go for it, and he's not been the best owner for other reasons, which you can look into, but he is definitely empowering Billy Epler in his front office to improve this team and, you know, be a kind of a dynamic squad while he's got him. I mean, you know, Marlins are trading away Giancarlo Stanton. The Angels are building around Mike Trout. And at some point last year, they were in kind of similar positions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were very close to wondering if they were going to actually move Trout before he finished up his extension. And, I mean, it's good to see them build around him. Trout deserves to win. He deserves to have a winner or at least some chance to win, no matter whether he stays with the Angels or not. I think that starting like Cashel would be someone they can go out and get realistically from the Marlins, because they have the capital to pay down the cost of his contract, and they could probably toss some lower end prospects in with it. I think Castro is a good guy for them to look at.
Yeah, the other alternative that I'll just throw out there is Martin Prado, we're talking about Marlins guys, because I think he'd be a good balance with Jose Valbuena if they want to keep Valbuena in the mix at third base. And Prado's got that, you know, fantastic clubhouse vibe that I think would be good for another glue guy to have in there. I think he'd work well in that clubhouse. So great, good job, Angels. Any other trades you want to cover real quickly before we cut it off?
Oh, I have the best player in baseball who was traded. You didn't hear this?
No.
Ryan Schimpf was traded.
Man, I don't care about Ryan Schimpf. Yeah, it's so appropriate that he goes to the Rays, but let me tell you, I have no idea what the Rays front office is doing. Schimpf's not good. He hits for power, but he is not good. I expect them to move him to first base because he's a bad defensive second baseman. And if Schimpf moves to first base, he is the next in the line of absolutely bonkers Rays first baseman. And it's very appropriate. It makes sense from the perspective of the Rays are weird and they're going to do things that don't make sense. They didn't give up anything for him, which makes sense because he's not worth very much. But he is an all or nothing power hitter. He is going to hit the catwalk in Tampa. And in the end, I sincerely doubt that he's going to make a big difference on the bottom line in terms of wins and losses for the Tampa team.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We really don't have much left to talk about. Sean Armstrong signed with the Mariners.
I want to talk about Sean Armstrong.
We haven't talked about Sean Armstrong signing with the Mariners.
I put this on the list because I wrote the Indians annual comments a couple of years ago for the BP annual, and I had to research Sean Armstrong because I didn't know who Sean Armstrong was. And he was this guy who could pop 97, 98 miles an hour in double and triple A, and I was really excited about him. The velocity's come down a little bit, but I'm going to forever be a Sean Armstrong guy. So I think the Mariners did a great job by getting him for a really limited return. You know, after the Ohtani thing didn't work out, they're like, hey, maybe we'll trade away some of our bonus pool money. And I think this is a guy who potentially could be something along the lines of a good seventh inning pitcher. I'm not sure he's a good future closer anymore, but if he could be a good seventh inning pitcher, the Mariners desperately need that. They desperately need a guy who can come in there and pitch 60 innings out of the bullpen and they don't have to worry about. And he can still bring a little bit of heat. So I like this move for the Mariners a lot. He wasn't going to get any run in Cleveland. So good on the Mariners for bringing in a guy I like.
Yeah, I second everything you said. So last one we have is Edison Volquez being released from the Marlins, which is kind of sad because you knew that the fact that he replaced Jose Fernandez in that rotation meant a lot to him. You saw it when he threw his no-hitter, and he kind of talked about replacing Jose Fernandez and how it's almost an impossible task. So kind of from the non-baseball side of things, it's a little sad. But, I mean, it was a foregone conclusion in that he had Tommy John surgery. So, thoughts?
Yeah, the Marlins don't care about Edinson Volquez and his recovery from Tommy John surgery. I think that if they had any hopes that they could package him with another trade, they would have done that instead of releasing him, because now it's just $13 million worth of dead money on their roster, whatever it is. And if there's one thing the Marlins hate, it's dead money. But it's also going to help them in terms of their 2017 payroll or 2018 payroll, because, you know, they can cut more players and they still owe that guy $13 million. But I'm hoping Volquez, after his release, will sign a minor league deal or a two-year deal with some team. Maybe it's going to be the Royals, maybe it's going to be the Padres, where he can go in, he can rehab, and then have a shot at it next year. I'm not a big Edison Volquez the pitcher fan, because I don't like his peripherals. I don't like his performance most of the time, but I do hope he clings on somewhere, gets a good shot at rehabbing, you know, the Dodgers, something like that, going back to the Dodgers, and, you know, get a shot to come back maybe as a reliever in 2019 or maybe as a starter and prove he's still got some value as opposed to having to sit through this Miami garbage.
Absolutely. So final question, I guess, very busy offseason. Winter meetings are now over, so it's probably going to slow down a little bit. What's left? What do you think is next? What do you think is the next big move that comes out? Who do you think should be the next big move as well?
17 of the top 20 players on my top 50 free agents list have not signed. So there is a lot of top-end talent still available. The next domino to fall? Really tough to say. I think it's going to be one of the starting pitchers, whether it's Arrieta or Yu Darvish or one of these other guys. I think we're going to get one decision on a top flight, you know, tier one or tier two starting pitcher in the next week or two. And then with that, I think the rest of the starting pitcher market's going to kind of fall into place. I also could definitely see somebody like Wade Davis or Greg Holland signing their contract now that the market's kind of been set for relievers. I still think that it's possible that Davis is waiting on an FU offer from some team, like a four-year, $70 million contract or something like that. But I think that might be the next big domino to fall, is either going to be a top-flight starter or a top-flight reliever.
Can't disagree with you. I think that we're starting to see Darvish's name floated out in rumors now, which means that the interest is starting to heat up. So, I mean, who knows? Zach Cozart's been floating around. Eric Hosmer, one of the best three players in baseball, right?
Yeah, that's what I hear.
He's been getting out there too. Kind of quiet on the Carlos Santana front, but I think he'd be a very good signing somewhere that needs a first baseman. Mark Reynolds starting to get out there as well. So
yeah, Carlos Santana and Mark Reynolds are very similar. So that'll do it for today's show. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Sean, thank you so much for taking a slightly larger load than usual today and helping me out walk through all of these very many reliever signings. So I appreciate your ability to come on and talk intelligently about guys who, you know, are basically interchangeable. If you want to get in touch with the show, we are at DFA Podcast on Twitter. You can email the show at dfapodcast@baseballperspectives.com. And I'd like to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.